Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report podcast. I'm your host, Vagram Radian. Our podcast is brought to you by Bell. Since 1935, Bell has been redefining flight. Learn more about its pioneering spirit at bellflight.com. And joining us today on the second day of the Surface Navy Association's 33rd annual conference is retired United States Navy Vice Admiral Rick Hunt, a former commander of U.S. Naval Surface Forces and the current president of Fincantieri Marinette Marine. I should also point out that Rick is president of the Surface Navy Association. Sir, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for taking time today to sit down and talk a little bit. It's always good to do updates and stay current on major programs like Constellation.
We are an SNA media partner, and our coverage of SNA this year is sponsored by Fincantieri, Marinette Marine, Leonardo DRS, and GE Marine. Our other sponsors include Leonardo DRS, that sponsors our global coverage, Northrop Grumman, our weekly cyber report and our cyber coverage overall, General Atomics Aeronautical Systems of our coverage of strategy, and Beretta USA sponsors our land warfare coverage. You've been building your facilities to deliver on the program while also working program details with the Navy. I mean, I think that people sometimes have this impression, contracts award, you move out, but the Navy does make quite a lot of changes. And so there is always a back and forth. And you're doing all of this at a time of COVID that's impacted both you and the Navy. Give us an update on where we are right now when you start bending steel and delivering ships.
Well, it's interesting. You know, first of all, I'll tell you, everything in the shipyard is on track. So we need to finish the programs that we've got right now. So we've got LCS. We just had a very good test with LCS 23 for sea trials and received the highest scores that we've had for any of the LCS, I think tying a previous all-time top score. MMSC continues to go forward. And, you know, we kind of wrap these things up, LCS in 2023 and MMSC in 2025. And we are clearly making way for the frigate. So we are continuing to work on detailed design right now. We're getting long lead time material ordered, working with the next layer down of, material to include the steel to get that in the shipyard at the right time. CapEx is a huge thing. One of the things that we're really focusing on is collectively using all three of the shipyards. So Bay Shipyard and Sturgeon Bay, ACE, that does the aluminum work for us down in Green Bay, and then, of course, the main yard in Marinette. And that's coming together very, very well. So CapEx such as the synchro lift, preparation so we can put ships in the water very softly as opposed to sliding down the ways or going over sideways like we've currently done, which means we can do more finishing and preparation to get the ship delivered to the Navy. I think that's a strong plus. A lot of work going on there for the last 6 months. We're going to have a completely new erection building for finishing the frigate put in the shipyard, moving forward on that. And then we're also building out Bay Shipyard considerably beyond what it does right now to be able to handle both increases in military and potentially commercial ship projects. Also Bay, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but they do portions of LCS, they'll do portions of MMSC, and they'll do really the bow section for the frigate as we go forward. So things are going well. They're very busy. We're out there, we're hiring, we're growing the workforce. The workload will ultimately be twice what we're doing right now when we get up to full production on frigate. But we are excited and looking forward to delivering the world's best frigate.
And when do you cut steel and when is the first unit delivery?
So we'll cut steel next fall. We wrap up detailed design in about the same time frame. And the ship actually gets delivered in 2026. So long process to get that first ship out there. And then you start cutting that time down a little bit as we move forward. But these are big and complex ships, and we want to make sure that we get it right. One of the focuses the Navy has been adamant about is let's lock in the design, and we're going to build these things identically through at least the first 10 ships. And I think that's a brilliant way to do business. That's what we did on Oliver Hazard Perry class, and I think that was one of the strengths that we had, and we're going to capitalize on that.
The follow-up question to that, and it's great to lock the design out, because obviously one of the problems or challenges we've seen is that the Navy picks a certain ship. You know, in this case, the Navy drove changes to each of the competing ships to the point where some were asking whether the improvements were worth the added costs that were being imposed on the program. And then once there's contract award, the Navy continues to fiddle with the design. And then with each subsequent unit that's delivered, the Navy tends to fiddle with the design. And obviously there were those who say that LCS got into these problems in part because then the contractor gets held holding the bag, delivering what is a ship that's fundamentally different than what was bid, and then being judged against some of those costs. Can you deliver the ship, you know, and then it becomes an unwinnable task. Are you satisfied the changes that have been made have improved the design, Rick? And more importantly, can you deliver the ship the Navy wants for the price that you've bid on it? Because everybody also keeps reminding everybody, as I'm sure they remind you, you bid this at a certain cost. And if the costs go up, there's always a question about the future of the program.
It's interesting as we go through detailed design, you know, you always wonder how the relationship is going to stay between the Navy and the industry. And what I would tell you is the team that Navy has put together, I think it's got the best and the brightest folks that they have in NAVSEA. We now have Captain Smith running PMS 515, and he is doing a great job and continuing with what Dr. Campbell started, you know, years ago, which is we are going to cooperate, we are going to be transparent, we're going to be interactive on any of the key design changes, capabilities that we put into the ship, and make sure we get it right. So as you know, we started with a very good parent design. I think the best frigate afloat today throughout the world. And I am convinced we're making it better. We're building it to U.S. Navy standards. We're making it U.S. tough. And we have done that. And, you know, there's always a trade-off on these things. When you add more steel to toughen things up, it takes away margin down the road, or maybe cuts back on your range a little bit for steaming. When you add extra fire pumps and change the configuration of the spaces, it has impact. That process is interactive. It considers the operational forces inputs, what drives the operators. Is this the right decision for sailors at sea? We're taking a look at life cycle costs. It is very good. It is probably the most time-consuming part of my job right now is working with the Navy to make sure we retain all those good areas that we had in the parent design, and yet we increase that lethality and survivability to make sure we are a U.S. warship the way you want to go out and sail the seas.
What about maintenance and availability goals? That's something that the FREM design prides itself on, an extraordinarily high availability rate. The Navy has wanted to carry some of that over. Are you going to be able to deliver that kind of overall readiness rate as the Navy tries to do more with each ship it's got in the fleet?
It's a great question, and I'll tell you, if I were to be successful in one area of capability that we get as we go forward with FFG 62, it would be improved sustainability. So we are looking at this as one of the highest priorities, is to make sure that we have a very good engineering plant design. So that goes to density, it goes to equipment access, removability routes for equipment for repair or upgrades. And we are, I think, achieving a very good balance with Navy on meeting these goals. So one of the things that we are working very hard to deliver is a platform that uses condition-based maintenance, builds upon that upfront engineering design, does maintenance focused towards the missions at hand, to allow sailors to be informed more than they are today of the material condition of their plant and what the remaining life is before they need to do the next critical maintenance before it fails. So, you know, you can balance out different equipment sets. You can take a look at upcoming missions and make sure you're ready and you focus the right man hours to get the proper work accomplished. We inherit a lot of that with the parent design. And I think that comes in no small part to the fact that there is a long history in Fink and Terry of not only producing ships, but being an integral part of sustainment throughout the life of any ship that they make. And so they look from the very beginning of any engineering design to the sustainability piece. And that's something that I think we need to embrace in the US Navy, put more focus on that, define the requirements to achieve that. We're gonna do that and deliver a fundamentally higher operational availability ship while reducing the manpower requirements to maintain it because of the focus that we've had on it and the good upfront engineering.
Even from the earliest stages of this program, Navy leaders have repeatedly suggested more of this ship, more of this class may be needed, and even raised the possibility of producing multiple yards. At one point, there was even a question, hey, instead of facilitizing another yard, why don't we just license, give you guys a license fee or the winner a license fee and build it at multiple yards. Now that conversation is back again about bringing another yard aboard to do this. How many of these ships will ultimately be built in your estimation? And how do you bring on another yard at this point? And if so, how?
Let's take a look at what the program is. So the program is really moving forward for the first 10 ships. And right behind that in the shipbuilding plan, there's another 10 behind that. And then you get into the trade space of small combatants and where you want to go. And when you get into a lot of what the Navy is coming forward with recently, the impact of getting the number of small surface combatants increased is moving strongly in that direction. I think that makes a lot of sense. You and I have talked about the frigate gap in the past. This is the workhorse of the surface fleet. Getting these out in numbers becomes very important. When I hear people say about let's start a second yard, let's get moving quickly, I think that's because there is recognition that this is a very good design. It's a critical capability for the United States Navy, and we need to get more ships out there as quickly as we can. I would caveat that, though, with a little bit that kind of goes to what we talked about earlier, is we want to lock in on a design, make sure we absolutely minimize the changes, and keep control of the configuration. And this is something that we've let get away from us in other classes over the years. So to do that, you need to make sure you get the ship actually built. It would be nice if you have time to get the first ship in the water, make sure that it works as well at sea as the design indicates that it will, and then go final. Right now, by all accounts, we're looking at a 1-1-1 building rate for the first three. Then the question is, how quickly do you go to two or more than that after that time frame? And I think we need to do that quickly. We need to do it smart. We need to lock down the design. We don't want to rush so fast that design is not proven in the final configuration before we open up the aperture to more shipyards. Kind of what we did with FFG sevens, we ended up with three shipyards. I think that the high point, we were building seven ships a year. It wouldn't surprise me if we end up with multiple shipyards. I encourage that. We got to do it at the right time, make sure the design is completely stable, that we as the lead shipyard have locked in every aspect of the building of the ship before we start spreading it out there, or you get into a position of maybe they're almost alike, but a little bit different, and the configuration control impacts ILS, it impacts training, production and repairs. So we just need to do it intelligently. So I like the pressure, I like the confidence. Let's watch that carefully as we go forward and make sure we don't stray, but we do deliver the best ship on cost, on schedule, as originally envisioned.
There are those, Rick, who look at the program and say, wow, this is really moving slowly, right? We were adopting a parent design that was already existing, and folks are looking at this and saying, wow, 26 is delivery, in service is 29. Is there a way to accelerate this at a time of competition with the Chinese in particular, who are fielding ships? These ships could be used by the fleet as soon as possible. What kind of trade space is there to accelerate this program and get it to the fleet faster?
You know, we've had some interesting discussions with Navy leadership. And when you say into the fleet in 29, one of the targets that we have right now is ready on delivery. So I think where you really make your money in a new shipbuilding program is make sure you get that design right, build to the design, lock all those processes in, and make sure when the ship is delivered, it's ready to go to sea and be operational. And being operational on delivery is a great goal. I think it's achievable. And frankly, we're putting that as one of those things we're teaming with the Navy to do. So if we can make sure that those ships are delivered ready to fight, ready to go to sea and do what they need to do within that first year of delivery, I think that's where you buy back your time. You start pushing some of the other things, the detailed design drawings, the production. I think you open yourself to challenges. So we're moving as quickly as we can in that area. We want to do it right. But that unexplored area to use the ships upon delivery, I think opens up the greatest advantage. And that's something that we're going to work very hard with the Navy, looking at the training programs as well as material condition and testing and trying to accelerate those things to the extent that we can. To get the ships to the fleet, not just the Navy, as quickly as possible.
You recently selected GE Marine's LM2500 plus G4 to power this new class. It is a different power plant arrangement, right? Even though it's an LM2500 plant, you guys are combined gas turbine with an electric propulsion plant. The Navy historically has wanted to have land-based prototypes in this. There's money in the National Defense Authorization Act to do that, but we're not sure where the Navy is on this process. Where do you stand in those deliberations to create a land-based prototype to make sure that the propulsion train of this ship, you get all the teething problems out of it, you do the training at prototype so that once people go to sea, they are familiar with the plant and you're not sort of learning as you go?
Great, great question. Two things. First, G4 is used on the Italian ships. So this is a proven design at sea in the parent ship. And that does a lot confidence-wise. A lot of the issues have been worked through many years ago, and we expect minimal impact of having that LM2500 G4. But you ask an equally, perhaps even better question about land-based testing. And I will tell you that my interactions with the Hill, going back before a decision was made on who won, I'm a strong proponent of land-based test sites, engineering test sites, of making sure you work out the powertrain, the complexities of the hybrid plant in particular. We can do an awful lot of risk reduction by doing this. And it has little to do with this particular class of ship and everything to the right way to build ships, test them, get them into the fleet with minimal risks, understanding capabilities and limitations in adjusting as necessary as early as possible in the process. So I like it. I like the fact that that we've got money in there for the land-based site. I will tell you right now that we're involved with the government in looking at a variety of different options on how best to do that, where that would be located, who would be in charge. The government's asked us for our input. Navy's going to do that evaluation. I think they'll work with the Hill also, and I believe we'll move ahead. And I think that's a very positive for the ship and can very much reduce risk. And I would encourage doing that for any Navy shipbuilding program in the future. It's always money in the bank doing that kind of thing.
We've got a minute left. Two quick questions. Russia has staged the largest hacks in U.S. government history. Navy leaders have been talking about the importance of designing systems from scratch with cyber defenses in mind. Talk to us about the cyber attributes of this ship as you get to final design.
So it's interesting. Again, you've heard me in the past talk sustainability, talk that hybrid plant, talk about margins. Cyber resilience is in there. So the frigate architectural framework, kind of the networking throughout the ship is based on, has cyber resilience built in from the very beginning. This is important. We're looking at it, as a classified program, so I'm not going to go too much into that. I will tell you that there has been more focus on cyber resilience and how you put the foundation to doing that right together on this ship than I've seen really in almost any other program across the Department of Defense. So this is a great thing. It's necessary. If we don't provide that adequate cyber resilience, I think our ships will be at risk, and we are fully embracing what we can do as a combination, again, of a team with the Navy and our industry partners moving forward.
And I should point out that L3Harris is the supplier for the combat system that you guys selected. One last question, Rick. COVID has changed everything and how everybody works. Hondo Gertz, the Navy acquisition executive, has talked about how he's improving the Navy organization, accelerating processes, now inspecting ships with one person instead of a dozen folks showing up on the waterfront. From your standpoint, how has it changed what you're doing? And what are the things you're doing differently that you'll keep doing differently going into the future?
First of all, I'd like to put a great comment for the efforts that Secretary Gertz did from the very beginning of COVID. He organized meetings between our industry partners and competitors to share best practices, and I think it made a huge difference across the shipbuilding industry on minimizing the impact. We're up at a grand total now, I think of a little over 225 positives for COVID. The impact has generally remained under less than 10% at any given time of impact on the shipyard. And our shipyard workers have stepped up and managed to keep us pretty close to being on schedule across the board. Most of that, of course, being in the LCS and MMSC programs. There is a little bit of extra work that goes involved. The social distancing, the extra cleaning procedures, kind of the contact tracing and making sure that we get folks from the very beginning out of the shipyard if necessary, in a very timely way, give them time to get back in battery and to return safely to the ship workforce. So that's occurring. I think everybody's doing that out there in industry now. A lot of that was shared information. And I think we're working through that and have achieved steady state and are delivering on time and on schedule again.
And so far, no worries about delivering on cost to that sort of $1 billion per ship cost. I know that stuff like that becomes a little bit legend, but you're satisfied you're going to be able to nail those goals?
We bid very aggressively, and we're still committed to doing that. I think we're going to achieve those goals. And, you know, it's a, as we partner together to keep the configuration control in hand, I think that is a factor of hitting those price targets. And both ourselves and our Navy partners are committed to doing just that. So that is on everybody's radar screen every day when they get up, and we're working really hard. I think we'll be able to achieve those price points.
Sir, Fair Winds Following Seas, thanks very much for joining us. Best of luck on the program, and can't wait for all of this to lift so that we can come up there and see some of this great work in person and actually get a chance to see you as well and catch up.
I look forward to doing that, and certainly we want to get you up to the shipyard and walk you around and see what we're doing in production right now, where we are in kind of the detailed design progress. And the CapEx is just phenomenal. I think you'd be very impressed with what's going on in all three of the shipyards. So thank you for your time, and look forward to getting together soon.
Yes, sir. Very much looking forward to it.